Hi, welcome to Dial H for Honor, the podcast dedicated to Ubisoft Montreal's new slash fighting game, For Honor. I'm Indigo X, my real name is Isaac, although gaming I usually go by some form of Indigo, and I'm joined by Farcon and the Fatal Fury.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
I first found For Honor on Reddit. There was a post that hit the front page. It was actually people complaining about how it was going to be player-to-player, or peer-to-peer, instead of dedicated servers. Which is sort of funny that a negative post is what brought me into it. But how about you guys?
I actually started playing For Honor in the last closed beta before the open beta. And I read up on the game and stuff like that. I really like the game mechanics, mostly because my background with games used to be fighting games. So I used to attend tournaments when I was like a lot younger and stuff. So this seemed like the next best thing, and that's why I got into it.
Yeah, after Chivalry, I was kind of hoping for a good fighting, medieval, sword clashing, battle, beat 'em up, stab 'em in the face game. And hey, what do you know? Florentine style with Peacekeeper. I was in.
Yeah, I never got to play Chivalry, but it looked pretty cool. Do you think it compare? Like, how does it compare?
Well, Chivalry is much more different. With For Honor, you have three directions to block. With Chivalry, you have everywhere to block. That's really the main difference. And there's more glitches in Chivalry. Well, they're not glitches. They're more like techs where you can do an overhead behind you and still hit someone, which is still kind of ridiculous to me. But yeah, it does feel a lot slower than Chivalry. But that might be just because the attacks seem slower in For Honor.
All right. And you died quicker in Chivalry, is that right?
Oh, yes, you do. The attacks that people can use are much more diverse. You got weird overheads, you got weird feints that somehow turn into pointy stabs in the face and you didn't even see it coming. So, and there's a lot more movement involved. Obviously, there's not as many environmental deaths and hazards, but it's definitely quite an interesting game.
Sounds more realistic than For Honor. That's kind of a cool thing, though. I should definitely take a look at that.
No, it's not. In the way that the characters move around, you just move way too fast realistically. In For Honor, you have, like, I'm going to move behind myself real quick, but then your character takes an extra couple steps to shift his weight and move around.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, and the environmental effects, like, if you get guard broken, you're pretty much toast. But in Chivalry, it's really about how many blocks you blocked and how the angle of the block you took, how much that knocked you back, and things like that. So, in a sense, they both have their realistic values, but in the end, For Honor's more realistic due to the fact that characters actually have weight to them.
That's cool. Actually, I was speaking to somebody from Coldfire, who actually runs a HEMA class, and I was like, so what do you think about the Warden, and how is he, like, compared to, like, HEMA stuff? And he was like, you know what, it's actually, out of all the games that he's played, like, this is probably the closest to HEMA, which is actually a good point. That's really cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I know a lot of the things, like, some people thought that, I think it's called, like, half-handing, when the Warden will hold his own blade, was fake, but I've read that that's a real thing.
It is a real thing.
Do.
Increases the speed in which you can do attacks, and it's more useful for grappling as well.
All right. So, you mentioned Coldfire. I did want to read this thing. This podcast, Dial H for Honor, is affiliated with Coldfire Gaming. Coldfire Gaming is an international gaming community and esports organization, and a place for players to come and play stress-free. For more information, you can join them on their Discord. And then in our episode description, we're going to have links to their Discord as well as their website, and you can follow them on Twitter at ColdfireGC. It's a pretty cool and very new little organization and community. And right now they're more casual. They're running some tournaments, but I do know that in the future they want to field, like, actual esports teams in the various games they're involved in.
Very near future, actually.
Yeah, there's a 2v2 brawl and a 1v1 duel coming up in a couple of days.
Yeah, actually, Unit, who's one of the owners of Coldfire, they just got approved from Battlefy to actually do, like charge and stuff like that, so they can do like pot tournaments and stuff, which is kind of like legit tournaments and things. So, yeah, if anyone wants to join and stuff and come into Coldfire and get, take serious and stuff, trying to get to the next level, you know, want to join, like, maybe hopefully the game does make it to esports. I have faith that it will. So, yeah, it would definitely be a good place to start at.
Yeah, I think it is going to. I like it's only been out for a couple weeks, and Ubisoft is already being really involved in the community and talking about hot fixes and patches for characters that they don't feel are doing as well. So I think it has a good chance of making it as an esport.
Yeah, it feels similar to Hearthstone, where a lot of people didn't think it would like really get into the esports scene. But then, boom, bada, boom, next thing you know, you have like a huge scene going on, various complicated rules, and people you didn't think were going to be popular just spring out of nowhere. So,
yep, agreed. It's also like Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah, I think those are good comparisons. And it does kind of fit that same mold that those Blizzard games go for of, like, just rope in a bunch of casual players, and then eventually the more competitive ones will kind of figure out the tournaments on their own.
Watch out, Dota.
Not to that extent. Come on now.
I'm hoping.
Moving right along into the tournaments that have already happened, because there have been quite a few For Honor tournaments already. There are actually a couple I know during at least the open beta. I don't know if there were any before that. But then since release on Valentine's Day, there have been several. Most notably, a couple days ago, as of recording, was the first week of the War Rising circuit, where they had a pretty big, I think it was 256 entry 1v1 tournament.
Yeah, I was definitely around that. The first tournament that I know of that I saw was streamed by Ubisoft, and it was a celebrity tournament. But they also had a couple of people that were in the alpha and in the beta and stuff. And then they had a couple of, I think the only general, well, quote unquote general that they've assigned, was the one for the Viking, and that was the faction wars. And I know that the winner of the faction war was actually the Vikings. And then they had like a little celebrity tournament and stuff like that. So, but that was actually an official like tournament, but it was like a faction war. So I know that after that they had the War Rising that just came out recently. Coldfire actually had the first 1v1 tournament was two weeks ago, which I got third place in.
Yeah.
and then last week they had the first 2v2 tournament. So this Friday at 7 p.m. they're actually going to have the next 1v1 tournament.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool that Coldfire has decided to just like make them regular events, and that way, you know, just more and more people joining each week.
Yeah, I think right now they're like at, I think since yesterday they were at 95 or 80, between 84 and 95 people, so it's definitely growing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a popular game. It's I know that one of the first couple days it was out, or it actually might have been during the open beta, it was in the top 5 games being streamed on Twitch, just because everyone wanted to check it out.
Yeah, definitely agreed.
I mentioned the War Rising tournament, which is by Panda Global, and they're like a fighting game tournament organizers. And so right now they have a weekly 1v1 tournament thing going on, and then after 5, I think, weeks, so it's 4 or 5, they're going to have people who have placed in the top 8 will get points towards their invitational final, which will be on April 3rd.
Yeah, I think it's them, and also it's Smash.gg, right? I think it's the other one.
Yeah, it was organized through, so Panda Global organized through Smash.gg. If you go to smash.gg/WRS is where you'll find all the info about it.
Yeah, I one of the things that actually makes me very hopeful was because when I first learned about it, they actually had a person who is a very avid Street Fighter player. His name is L.I. Joe, and he actually got top 8 in the last EVO tournament. I think they're really doing a good job at like getting a couple of pros and stuff like that from like, you know, other, even from other genres and stuff. Because actually, now that I remember, in the tournament, even though I think he lost in the first or second round in the Wars Rising, Sonic Fox was in there, and Sonic Fox is famous in the Smash Brothers tournament. He's like I think he's unbeatable in like in Mortal Kombat 10.
Yeah, he's a big Mortal Kombat guy.
Yeah, and then he also plays in Smash Brothers a lot too. So things like that really make me hopeful for this game. Like, it's like they're, you know, you have these big fighting players that are like, they want to take this seriously. I mean, L.I. Joe didn't really play, but he was definitely there and stuff, and supporting the game and everything. So I have hope. I mean, I don't think it'll be there for this EVO game, for this EVO tournament, because they've already announced the games that are going to be there, but I'm really hopeful for next year's.
Yeah, it's really nice to see how much the fighting game community has embraced For Honor already, especially because it's not at all a traditional fighting game. You know, it's not two-dimensional. It gets rid of a lot of kind of the staple mechanics of the genre, but people still like it, and that's really great.
Yeah, agreed. I think I see it more because I was a really big Soul Calibur player back in the way back in the day, like during Soul Calibur 2. And granted, the blocking mechanics are totally different, but it has a similar feel. It's more like a three-dimensional fighting game, you know, with some MOBA aspects.
Yeah, the Dominion mode especially. Actually, the game that For Honor has reminded me the most of, you ever played any of the 3D Naruto fighting games?
I never got into it, actually, no. Unfortunately.
All right. So we've seen some, you know, tournaments now, and there's obviously a lot of discussion about what, you know, kind of how the characters rank up and what the tier list is, and also what the meta is, both in terms of what characters people are using and in how people are fighting. I don't know. Do you guys have any kind of initial thoughts about that?
The almighty meta. Every game has to have its meta. I don't know. I don't think people are really quick to judge tiers and metas. I don't think there's a meta yet. There's definitely one forming. I would probably say the one hero that everyone's is definitely can agree upon as part of the meta is definitely the Peacekeeper.
Yeah, absolutely. Then there's some arguments about whether the recent change to the Peacekeeper, where the light attack hits from further away, is making the best character better, or if it actually makes it a little bit worse by making the guaranteed second hit harder.
So as a Peacekeeper main, I can definitely say that one of the aspects that make a Peacekeeper OP is our second attack. It's a lot faster than most classes can even react. Heroes can even react. So increasing the range means that the first hit will be blocked, because you could just whiff the attack and then make a second attack that pretty much vortexes into them, and then you get a cheap free hit in, and then you just rinse and repeat. So it's a little bit of more like, I wouldn't say a buff, but more like a fix.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. And then were you playing Peacekeeper in the open beta?
I believe so. I didn't play the open beta as much as I wanted to.
Okay, but I was just wondering, so because the bleed damage, I know, was sort of accidentally chained, and then they're going to fix it, or is that fixed yet?
No, they fixed it.
Changed. Yeah, it's already fixed. So okay. Now you can do 42 points of damage with that 3-hit combo now.
Right. So how's that difference feeling now that you can do the full damage from that?
To be honest, because of how good people have been at counter guard breaking, I can really only get off against the good ones after a parry. So the damage is nice, and if we're up against a wall, we can hit them twice with stab and then kick them to the wall, rush, do our dodging heavy, and hit off another bleed. So it does deal more damage, basically, just not as drastic as people are saying.
Yeah, you don't think it's OP?
No, because bleed takes time to take effect. So in that amount of time, you know, they could have revenge. They could be attacking you. Some of the classes could, heroes can regenerate some health.
Yeah. That sounds fair.
I agreed on that aspect. I think a lot of people are still kind of used. One of the major arguments with the bleed effect is because I think they're still traumatized by the before the game was released. Because I remember in the closed beta and in the open beta, that bleed, like, on anyone that wasn't a heavy character, so like the Conqueror, the Warlord, and the Shigoki, everybody else, the bleed would be like half-life. It would be ridiculous. It was insane. So I think people are so traumatized by that. It definitely, obviously, it doesn't do the same. They even, you know, on the patches, they even said themselves that they nerfed it, because I don't know. They were saying it was a bug. I don't think it was a bug. I think they just nerfed it and they went way too far. And then they said that they fixed it and stuff like that, but they didn't go back to what it was in the beta. They said we reduced the damage, and that's what it shows on the patch notes. So I think that, in my opinion, that's what it was. It was that they nerfed it, they pretty much destroyed it, and then they used the excuse of, oh, it was a glitch. And then we're like, you know, but these are the new numbers and it's lesser than it was before in the beta. I think it's fine right now. I'm okay with it. My gripe, honestly, with the characters, some of the characters, not all of them, the Peacekeeper included, is the AoE attacks, because the Peacekeeper is insanely fast.
It's too fast.
Yeah, the same thing.
I think that, sorry to interrupt me, but I think that there's two aspects that people are not, to think that the Peacekeeper is OP, because one is the free second hit that you can get with the light attack when you whiff, and then two is the zone attack. It's like, if you see it coming, you can of course parry it, but it's still an extremely huge risk, and I've only been able to reliably parry it when they're spamming. I think that it should be the same aspect as the Warden. Like, if the attack is blocked, you can't cancel it. I think it should be that. So then you'd automatically do your second zone attack, get parried, and then get punished for not getting your attack in. And I think that would promote more like careful usage of the zone attack instead of just spamming it. And in regards to bleed, I didn't mention this, but I think people believe that bleed is OP because this game is like really defensive focused. Like, it's all about blocking, parrying, and dodging for the most part. And I know that Ubisoft is going to do something to fix it up a little bit. They're still working on it, but because it's so defensive, it's a lot easier just to hang back and let the bleed do its effect. And then people see that red in their bar, and they're like, oh, OP, someone gotta get him. And then they make mistakes, and then it causes them to think that it's OP.
Yeah, I played quite a bit of Nabushi, and I think you're right about the bleed, and that more people need to just sort of have the mindset of, like, that's already damage they've received, you know, unless they have a healing ability, unless they can go into revenge, that sort of thing. As opposed to, like, people feel like it's extra damage when it's really just damage that's subtracted from what otherwise would be immediate.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
So, you know, Peacekeeper's up there. I think Warlord and Conqueror are also pretty good.
I don't know. I don't feel... I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
The Warlord, yes, definitely. I can definitely say without a doubt that the Warlord's up there.
Yeah, definitely.
The Warden, I can also say without a doubt, but there's the thing is that they're up, to me, in my opinion, they're up there for specific reasons. It's not that they're up there because their kits make them up there, like put them up there. You know, they don't have the huge skill, like their skill is not as high. Like, for example, the Peacekeeper, I would say yes, she requires a lot of skill, especially for like the top players. Like, they're like, oh no, she's easy to use. I'm like, no, she's not, because you have to learn how to block, you have to learn how to parry. You have to be good at dodging and stuff. If she gets hit, you know, if you get cornered in the wall, she's dead. You know, she's not good at fighting multiple people. She's not supposed to be. And that's where it falls into where I'm going into the whole thing of, like, they're good for specific reasons, especially the Peacekeeper and the Warden. The Warden is the only character in the game that can jump in and that could jump into a fight from any angle, because he has a fast overhead. He has a fast left, which is a zone attack, and then he has a fast right, where if you're not targeting somebody and he charges in you, he attacks from the right. He's the only character that has it. To me, that should be fixed. With the top and right are fine, but the zone attack, which is the same thing with the Peacekeeper and the Orochi, In my opinion, I believe that they should be slowed down, because the zone attacks are meant for that. They're meant to be zone attacks. They're meant to hit multiple things at a time. For them, that's not what they are. They are an extra attack. They're an additional attack. So, like, when, like, as a Conqueror or as a Warlord, you'll use those zone attacks when you're fighting multiple people to get them away from you, you know, or to, you know, and to for zone attack, that's what they're there for. But for these three characters, the Warden, the Peacekeeper, and the Orochi, that's not what they are. They're attacks, and they're really fast. So you have to, it's not about saying, oh, there's the attack, I'm going to block it. It's, I have to keep my guard here in this area at all times, because when they do use it, I can block it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Especially because it seemed, I thought the purpose of zone attacks, you know, when I first started playing the game, was like, you're in Dominion or you're in Skirmish, and it's to clear out soldiers. And then I was really caught off guard the first couple of times that happened to me in duels, where it's like, oh, no, okay, so people are actually using these to fight just one person. And like you're saying with those characters, it can be very, very fast.
What do you think, Farcon?
Like I said before, I think that if you block it, it should be a free guard break. Like, regardless if it's really fast, because if you just keep your area of blocking towards that one specific area that they're going to attack from, I think that's like a a thing that you learn, that's a skillful thing that you learn, and it pays off if they make the mistake, and you'll probably feel a lot better. Like, ha, there's zone attack spamming. That's free card breaks. Yeah,
that makes sense to me.
Yeah, that's also that could also be implemented. It makes sense. I mean, I just think that it's and honestly, like I said, with the Peacekeeper, I think the Peacekeeper's fine. I don't believe that she's OP. I've taken down many Peacekeepers. It's like, people are like, oh, well, she attacks really fast. I'm like, okay, have you heard of dodging back? You know, you can do that. And just don't let her get in your face. It's like, she only has one way to get into your face, and that's the up hard. Dodge four up hard. That's the only way she can get into your face. Every other way is normal fighting. If she gets too crazy, then back up. And just keep that distance with her. That's her weakness. If you can keep that distance, then you're good to go. And then prepare for when she starts dodging left and right, and faint. That's it. You do that, Peacekeeper is dead in the water. But the Warden doesn't have that, and he's a Vanguard character. Vanguards are supposed to be good. They're the jack of all trades, but the master of none.
I don't think the Raider is exactly.
Raider. That's the next topic. The next topic is which characters should be buffed and which ones should be nerfed. The Raider is definitely a character that definitely needs a bigger kit, because he doesn't fall under the Vanguard characteristics.
Yeah, I would totally agree. He, if anything, you know, maybe a hybrid kind, you know, because. Sort of between a heavy and a Vanguard, but definitely not an actual Vanguard.
He's not a Vanguard. He's just easy.
Yeah, definitely. He's the starter character.
Yeah, in regards to when you were saying about the Peacekeeper in your face, I've noticed that in my high level duels as a Peacekeeper, a lot of people have been parrying my dodge attacks, regardless if they're to the side or if they're like charging forward. And I've been starting to parry more of the Warden's. When they run sprint attack, because it always comes from the right. I don't fully agree with the methods of engagement and closing the distance to engage, but yeah.
Well, my thing was that it's every character should have at least one form of engagement, and most of them do. They generally have one form of engagement. The Warden has three. He has his own attack, because it's really fast, that comes from the left. He has his charge, that comes from the right. And then he has his lights from the top that come from the top. Now, the thing is that they're all fast. So you don't. So if you block to the right because he can charge you and you see him running, he can do that. But then if he stops midpoint and zones, you can't dodge left. So now you're taking a hit from the left. And then if you dodge left and he runs at you and he goes to the right, then depending on which character you have also, you won't be able to block. And then he's in your face. And then if you're preparing for both and he just walks up to you and you try to you're doing the left because you know he's going to do a zone attack, he obviously can't charge you, but then he can light you on the top, which is also fast. So then no character has that. He's the only one that has that ability. So, and that's why, in my opinion, that the zone attacks for him specifically should definitely be slowed down. You know, not only, you know, I definitely agree with you on the whole, like, if, you know, but the thing is also with the Warden, he gets penalized. If you do a zone attack with him and it's blocked, he's screwed, you know, and that's if he does that. But that's only one out of the three that he can come into, jump in and do whatever. And then once he's in your face, then what comes after that? The Vortex. And then what do you do? You know?
Yeah. But, you know, it's not like the Warden's unbeatable. I think especially last week, there were a lot of people when they kind of realized how the Warden Vortex worked and, you know, that you could cancel the shoulder charge and all that. A lot of people thought, like, okay, Warden's going to be absolute S tier. Nothing can touch it if it's played well. But then comes, you know, to get back to the War Rising tournament where kind of one of the favorites to win, Ice Guys, playing his Warden, then loses to, I believe, relatively unknown V-Trax, who was playing Raider. And while I still do think Raider's underpowered, that still shows that, like, this game, these characters we're talking about, and, like, this tier list, you know, if there is one yet, it's still early in the game, is not, rather, the characters are pretty well balanced, that we can say, like, oh, this character's generally better, but here on a high level, we still have someone winning with the other one.
I totally agree on that, and the reason why I'm saying these is because I'm taking into account, which I didn't make clear, but I'm taking into account high skill levels and for the future. Because in the future, once people figure out, once we get an actual meta, once we get an actual tier list, and I'm probably like 2 to 3 months from now, probably 3 to 4 months to say the truth, because of the high skill cap that this game has.
Sure.
I feel that's where I feel that these things that I'm saying now are going to come into fruition. Then if they're not changed now, those things are going to come into fruition later. They're going to be like, hey, these guys have this. And the one thing I like about For Honor the most, well, just in like any fighting game, is that, for example, everyone was expecting Ice Guys to win, and then he loses to a no name, and not only does he lose to a no name, he lost to a no name with a Raider,
right?
You know, but the thing also you have to take into account too, that that fight specifically, not only it wasn't just that the Raider won only on skill, he also had the environment, which a Raider, in all retrospect, should have. It's, you know, there's certain classes that are that they don't have high damage, they don't have this, they have a fail this, but they're good at other things. And the Raider is good at environmental damage. His thing is environmental damage, the same way as the Warlord, that their thing is the environment. They have to use the environment to win.
Well, I would say the Warlord's good even without the environment sometimes, and that's part of the issue with the Warlord is that he, you know, is kind of very good out in the open. You know, you can be playing in Cathedral, he's very good. But then, you know, he gets the environment, and that's when he's absolutely top tier.
Oh yeah, he's definitely an S tier or God tier if they don't have one yet. I'm like I said, originally, I'm not really keen on the tiers yet. I mean, there are definitely certain characters that are definitely going to be on the top tier list. Peacekeeper being one of them. The Warlord, that's without a doubt. I believe that the Warden is also one of the top tiers. I'm not going to say S tier. I don't think there is one yet.
Yeah, I would agree. I think S tier is a term that's been thrown around a little bit too much, but not just in this game, but in a lot of games, where you know, it really used to, you know, because remember, so tier lists were alphabetical, starting with, you know, A and going down, and then S was supposed to mean like it's out of the, like it's too high, right? So we're not going to put in A because it's like in a tier of its own. But now a lot of people would just use S tier to mean top tier.
Yeah, and I don't think that this game, right, it's not possible to determine who's an S tier character. Everyone that says that, they're like, oh, the character's OP and stuff, I was like, no, bro. I'm like, I'm sorry to tell you this, I'm not insulting you, but get good.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I really kind of want to see characters countering each other. For example, when the Peacekeeper in the finals was up against the Warlord, let's just say he was having a lot of trouble against that full guard. And like, you know, certain aspects of the characters should be able to counter other aspects of other characters. That way there's no S tier. There's like, okay, maybe S tier against Peacekeeper, Warlord, but it wouldn't be like S tier against everything.
I think we have to keep in mind too is that this isn't just a 1v1 game. It's very much meant to play in the 2v2 and the 4v4 modes. Although I would like to point out that, and this is a match we're going to talk about later for different reasons, though the semi-final of that Peacekeepers, King Richard, was against a Conqueror who also had that full block, and he did win that match.
Yep, yeah, he did. And I'm totally on the agreeing with Farcon on that. Like, I believe I see the game that way also. I see the game as like every character has their niche. They all have the one thing that they're good at, and they all have their weaknesses. There shouldn't be one character that's best at everything and best against everybody. They're gonna have their strengths and they're gonna have their weaknesses, and I feel that the game should stay that way. So, like, for example, the Conqueror, while not the best at 1v1ing, in my opinion, it's hard. It's a waiting game with him, so you have to wait and wait, and you have to make the other character frustrate, the person you're fighting, to get frustrated with them, and then that's kind of how you win with the Conqueror, and then catch them off guard by becoming offensive, where they're just like, oh, you know. But a Conqueror excels at elimination and dominion. There, he's amazing. That's how I see him. And then the same thing with the other characters too, that are, you know, while in 1v1, you're gonna have a hard time. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But then you put them in dominion and elimination, and they're great. Like, for example, the Raider. The Raider in a 1v1, 2v2, yeah, you're gonna have a hard time. Put them in elimination and dominion, oh my god, they're annoying as hell.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying about, you know, characters working in different modes. And would even add on top of that, like, Nibushi not great in 1v1. You have a very tough time with Nabushi getting your opponents to open up, because the only thing you can really hit someone who's guarding well is the kick, and then they can also dodge that and punish you, so it's not a good time for Nabushi in 1v1 right now. But in Dominion, I don't think there's any class or any character who can clear B faster than a Nabushi.
Play a Conqueror, you'll see.
Peacekeeper is actually extremely good at clearing soldiers when they're grouped up. I was actually surprised myself when I first started. I'm like, holy crap, B had so many soldiers. Now they don't.
Play Conqueror, and you'll see.
If I play Conqueror in Dominion, I'm usually just parking in A and staying there the whole game. Like, I'm doing with Conqueror.
Which is the other thing that they're really good at, and that's what they're meant for. That's why they're the defensive character, which... Who are the three? The Shugoki, Conqueror, and the Warlord, which the Warlord kind of has a lot of other roles.
Yeah.
They should definitely switch the Raider and the Warlord tournaments and make the Warlord a Vanguard.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right that like some of the classifications, and we talked about Raider before, like they're not really perfect, but I also don't think that matters so much because the only effect they have in game is the Renown in Dominion, correct?
Yeah.
So I don't think the class... I mean, so, like, we can kind of chuckle and be like, haha, Warlord's not really a heavy, but I don't think it's, you know, making the game worse by having him labeled that way.
No, you're right, but every character has their roles, and the Warlord is probably the one that doesn't fit his role.
Yeah.
He's easy.
Okay, so I mentioned this a little bit ago, but I did want to talk about the War Rising match with King Richard against... I'm sorry, I don't have the name of the Conqueror he was playing in front of me, but there was some controversy there where he was... where King Richard, as the Peacekeeper, who was winning the match, but was disqualified of a round for avoiding combat. So did you guys see that?
Yeah, I saw
that. Yeah, I actually was watching that, and I was like, why is he doing this? And then... I kind of clicked inside me that there was two sides to this. There was like one, the maps that they chose in the tournament were like really skewed towards characters like Warlords or anything with a bash, really. And then two, it was like, it felt really out of character for King Richard to act like that. Like there was something that must've been happening. And apparently his stream was being flooded. He was being egged on, you know, and he's like trying to concentrate on this tournament, and you're like in this tournament and it's like, what's with these fucking maps? They're all for the Warlord, you know? It's like, holy crap. And I guess it was then he just tilted and cracked, you know?
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up kind of his perspective, because I didn't want this to be an attack on him at all. And I do kind of want to give him the credit that he still rallied. He did go on to win that match even after getting DQ'd that one round. So it was just more of an interesting tidbit than like, oh, fuck this guy, you know?
Yeah, I definitely agree on that. It definitely felt like they were definitely picking maps for characters that were like, whose strengths were, you know, using the environment. I don't think he took about, he definitely didn't go about it the right way, but he had good reason to do it.
He overdid it, I think, still, regardless. Yeah. But you notice how he said, fuck this tournament, basically. Like, he didn't say, fuck the players, fuck the game, or fuck anything else. It was mainly just F this tournament, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly what I got from that.
And I do believe he said he wasn't going to participate in any more the War Rising events, but I have a feeling that we'll see him again. You know, he got second place, and there's going to be a pretty big prize pool for that Invitational, so I think he'll be back.
Oh, yeah, he will be. When there's money involved, anger is only so can only go so far.
Now, do you guys happen to know? Because I couldn't find this. Were the maps announced ahead of sign up? So like before character selection, or was that? Or did they find out just like as the rounds were coming up?
I don't know, but I think it was as the rounds were coming up, because it was DB was the one that's picking them.
I think that in future tournaments there should be some maps that should be banned because they have too many environmental hazards in favor of the other classes. Like, in retrospect, a hazard is something you play around, not something you aim for when you have the advantage.
I mean, I'd like to see something, some kind of system. It might be a little bit hard to implement now, but where the players get to, say, the guy who lost the last round gets to choose the last match gets to choose the next map or something, but maybe starting the first one on a very neutral map. You know, something like that, because I do like the variety, and I don't want to never see a Raider in a tournament.
I agree. I personally feel that the map should be randomized and just leave it that way. And then whatever map you land on, then, oh, well, you know, that's just how you have to deal with it, you know, for that fight specifically. And then use your character strengths, you know, in that fight the best way you can. They do have, though in the tournament, they do have the loser has the opportunity to change his character. So, I mean, going back to, like, the whole King Richard thing, if he was so upset about that, he could have at any point changed and picked a Warlord or changed and picked a Raider. You know, I'm not gonna say that he's good with them or that he's used them before. I personally have no idea. But if you lose a match, you have the opportunity to do that, to change your character, so that way you can meet those requirements if you want to.
Right. I do think the game is still, you know, way too early to say to someone like, hey, so you're gonna compete this tournament, better have like three characters you can play at a high level with.
Oh yeah, of course. I have two characters that I'm good with. I haven't matched them yet, but I'm good with. And it's for that reason, though, because while it is good to focus on one character, it's also good to at least get a little bit of variety in certain situations. Like, for example, in the tournament, it would suck if you got the shitty end of the stick, where if they were to randomize it, or in this case, where DB Brandon was picking the maps, you were getting all the maps that were totally against you. You know, if you know second character, then you would just, you know, work with the situation that you're given, with the cards that you're dealt.
Yeah. I do want to mention, so there's a tournament coming up. I think it was advertised for the first time today. I'm looking at their YouTube video right now, which was definitely put up today. March 1st is when we're recording this. And it's the For Honor Tryhard Invitational is what they're calling it. It's a 2v2 tournament. It's all people who've already been established, in early For Honor tournaments, maybe from other games. And all of the matches are taking place in Cathedral. So they are trying to give it kind of that big open, you know, not a lot of thing. You know, there's, I don't think there's any pits. I think there's some stuff on the walls, but that's about it on the Cathedral Brawl map. So, I do kind of like that. Not necessarily having a tournament be on the same map for the whole thing, but at least when the players are choosing their characters, they know what map they're going to be on.
I'm not sure if I'm, I always get this one confused between the two. Cathedral's the one that has a big church in the middle of the map, right?
Yeah, so if you're doing a 2v2 in Cathedral, you're on like the bottom floor the whole time, I think.
No. That one, you're actually on the geyser area the whole time if you're doing 2v2. But they do customized 4v4 because they have the spectators.
Okay.
They're going to elect they have to go. They pick wherever they want to fight. They don't have to go to the actual select locations, because that's what they were doing when they were in the castle. I believe that's, I don't remember what the name of that stage was, but it's one of the newer maps that came out after the beta during the release of the game. There was that one map that has like the B is in the bottom level. So they were generally fighting on the bridge. That's where they were generally selecting. So I mean, when it comes to maps like that and stuff, they have a, you know, like, in that case, there's no hazardous environment because they're too far away. Whereas when King Richard was fighting in that map, there was really no safe place because there was a fire in the middle and the spikes to the side. And then if you went to the side, there was ledges on the left side and then there was the small bridges behind you. So, like, you know, everywhere you were, it was just a hazardous environment. But in the Cathedral, they have the choice of playing inside the Cathedral, because they do it as a 4v4 for the spectators.
Okay. Yeah, and that map that the King Richard versus the Conqueror was on was, you know, a rough... Like, if you were going to have a breakdown, that's the map it would be on.
Yeah. I agree. If they're going to do it in the Cathedral, they're, obviously the players are going to either play in the front of the Cathedral, where the only place you can really fall off on is, like, the edge of the maps, or they're probably going to fight inside the Cathedral.
Yeah, well, I'm watching the YouTube video right now, and the footage they're showing is inside the Cathedral.
Yeah, that's most likely what's going to happen. But that's kind of weird, though, because they're doing a 2v2. How are they going to spectate? That's interesting, because you can't do...
They're most likely they're going to do, like, elimination, and only have, like, three on each team, and then kill each other, and then go from there, I'd imagine.
I think that's probably right. You know, it's like the 1v1s, they started as a brawl, and then just the commentators die.
Hey, Ubisoft, spectator mode. Come on, you can do it. Every other game's done it. You can do it. I believe you.
Agreed.
Well, not every game does it as of release, though. You know, that is a thing. I mean, this came out, you know, what, like 16, 15 days ago?
Yeah, somewhat.
And it'll eventually be in there just like Hearthstone, but it's just inconvenient because now you can't really do 4v4s because it makes spectating impossible. So that's all.
Yeah, that's kind of funny with Hearthstone, though, because Hearthstone was actually somebody created a mod to do the spectator, and then Blizzard introduced the spectator to Hearthstone, so that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes developers need a kick in the butt to be like, oh yeah, that's a damn good idea. Let's do that real quick.
Yeah, it is.
I get that they have their own agendas, and they only have so much time a day, but, you know.
Well, I think the word on the street for Hearthstone was that Blizzard thought having a competitive scene would hurt them and kind of make casual people not want to play that game, although it obviously had the opposite effect.
Yeah, it did.
At some point, I did want to talk about DM Brandon, just because, you know, he's been involved in a lot of games. He organized the War Rising, and he's one of the commentators for it. But he's been a somewhat controversial figure in a lot of the game, you know, communities he's been involved in, both in notably Smite and the Smash community. So there's a couple things that I think some of it is just that he's a guy who speaks his mind a lot. And kind of anyone like that is going to get in trouble eventually, even if they don't really deserve to.
Yeah, it kind of looked like, from my perspective, that he just tilted, just like how King Richard did. And like it looked as though he was under a lot of stress over doing something he really didn't want to do. Mm-hmm. But and then he got the wrong message, opened the wrong email, and it's like, ah!
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there's a video. I'm not going to give too much detail because I don't want to point people towards it, but just that, you know, about him or something he said on his stream that made a lot of people very upset. But he did, I think the next day he had a statement about this where he apologized to the guy, the viewer accepted his apology. I don't know, there was someone on the For Honor subreddit kind of trying to start trouble with that, but I don't think there's anything there.
I don't really know much about him. I read a couple of things and stuff like that, but the one thing I feel, and it's actually really true with like streamers and YouTube content creators and things like that, is that their population, I mean their fan base and their celebrity status really dependent on their actions. If he keeps doing these things, they're gonna get rid of him. You know, this last tournament, I think he did, was it on his channel though? Wasn't this the last
War Rising was on Twitch, you know, /DM Brandon, or twitch.tv/DM Brandon, whatever the address.
Yeah, so he was hosting it.
Yes, yeah, and he was one of the commentators. Yep.
Yeah, that I know. So I mean, in that aspect, you can't really do anything and stuff. But if he, you know, the whole, if he rages, if he does these things, if he, you know, if he gives an opinion that is bad, he, you know, the companies are not going to want to have him as a commentator. They're not going to want him to host tournaments. They're going to find other people, and there's a ton of other people that they can get to host tournaments and to commentate.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot more people out there shoutcasting than there used to be. Although I will say, I thought he did a good job with War Rising. You know, just as far as him and I'm forgetting who the other guy was. I don't know if either of you remember, but I thought they both did a good job.
I think so too. I agree.
But then before War Rising, there was the, I'm looking, I can't remember what this was called, but there was the kind of earlier sort of the launch tournament that DM Brandon also organized, where someone was banned for using one of the indicator glitches. And that's been very controversial just because it's the question of, so it's a fighting game, is abusing a glitch like that cheating or is it tech? Right, so if you're flashing to your opponent's screen that you're going to attack them from the left side and they get hit from the right, have you just cheated? Or have you just, you know, input a combo in the game that should be considered unintended but legal?
That's
It strongly depends on the glitch itself. Like, for example, if you can get guaranteed guard breaks with just a glitch, then it will definitely be considered a glitch and fixed. But if you tech the guard break in a way that makes it harder to guard break, but requires effort on your part as well and maybe some risk, then, you know, a glitch like that would be accepted as a tech.
I think in my opinion, it really depends on what the developers believe. If they believe that it's a glitch, then in tournament rules, it should be banned. But if they ask the devs, and the devs are like, we're going to look into it, or no, it's game mechanics, then it's not a glitch. It's game mechanics.
So then, and this question can go out to either of you, do you think there have been, you know, glitches, like I've talked, like we know there's the indicator glitch, you know, there have been a couple others. What glitches have you guys seen that you think should be not allowed? Tournaments can't allow that.
Tournaments, their admins and stuff like that, I believe that they're really good when it comes to determining what can be used and what can be used and what can and can't. And that's the thing with tournaments. In tournaments, they make the rules. So, for example, in the Randon's tournament, if he says you can't use the indicator glitch, and it's in the rules, and somebody uses it, then he's within his rights to ban them. But if it's not in the rules, then he can't ban them because it's just not there, so it's allowed. And tournaments are generally run that way. They have, you know, EVO has a huge list of things that you can and can't do, you know, and they're aware of a lot of glitches, you know, and they're like, all right, well, this glitch you can do because it's not really that big of a thing. It doesn't destroy the match in itself, and like Farcon said, you have to put the effort to make it work, you know. But then there are glitches that are game crashing. You know, well, they'll crash a glitch. Like back in the day, you had Marvel's Capcom 2, and you had the Gambit glitch, the infinite combo Gambit glitch, and that was a glitch, and there was like you can't do it in the tournament. So if somebody was caught doing it, they were banned. Period. They were just out of the tournament. But that always fell to the tournament rules.
Now my memory of this tournament, I didn't actually watch it when it happened, so this is all reading stuff afterwards. But that where someone was banned for this indicator glitch was that there was a rule written by DM Brandon and whoever else was involved in organizing that, where it was just sort of a vague, if you know, don't abuse a glitch. You know, it wasn't a rule specific. It didn't pertain specifically to that glitch, and they made a ruling like during the tournament to say, okay, that falls under this rule.
That's stuff that happens in tournaments all the time. It always falls to the admin, you know, as to what is abusive and what's not. It, you know, and then at that point, it really depends on how the admin handles it. If he didn't handle it the right way, you know, if he pointed the finger at the guy, if he got upset at the guy, and things that shouldn't have been things that shouldn't have been handled not in that way, then yes, he has to apologize because he didn't handle it the right way. But if he did handle it the right way, and then people took it out. They took it the wrong way, you know, or the player was like, oh, that's BS. You know, it's like, the guy who I fought last time did a lot and you didn't ban him, so on and so forth. Because even in tournaments, a lot of tournaments, they really put it towards the players. There are various tournaments where if a glitch is done and the player doesn't report it and the admin doesn't see it, then it goes through. You know, it's like, you should point it out when it happens. And it falls onto the responsibility of the players. So if the opponent saw it, he knew about it, and he didn't say anything, you know, then it just keeps going. If DB Brandon saw it, and then he made a rule, and he was like, he's abusing it, he should have red carded him, or yellow carded, you know, or whatever, like give him a warning, hey, look, it's a warning, don't do it. I don't know. I didn't really see the footage and stuff, or I didn't see that part of the tournament. But if he didn't give him a warning, and he just banned him, yeah, he definitely went about it the wrong way.
I mean, I didn't see the glitch either, but there's two other aspects to it. Like, if it was on purpose, then, you know, then it would be, like, a harsher ruling. But if it was done on accident, then, of course, like, you know, you kind of have a vague idea how you did it. Just try not to do it again, you know. And if they do it again on purpose, well, goodbye.
And then there are, of course, I don't know if you guys have seen this, but some tournaments that right now don't want Shigokis, because I believe there's a move that's not supposed to be unblockable, or it's an unblockable that can't be parried.
It's the second. Yeah, they I'm not gonna explain it, but basically their uninterruptibles are also unparryables based on a bug. So that's probably why they didn't add them into the tournament. And I guess this patch Ubisoft hasn't fixed them yet, so.
Right. So I think you know, if that's true, you know, which I believe that it is, that so a move that, say, I'm playing Shigoki, and I don't play Shigoki, but, you know, if I was and is a move I'm just using that I think is a regular move, but it's also bugged out, like, it wouldn't be fair for me to be in trouble for that. So I do think that just not allowing Shigokis until it gets fixed makes sense.
Yeah, of course. If it's a bug that's going to cause, like I said, if it's a bug that causes a problem to the game and how it's played, then it should definitely be banned. Sucks for Shigoki players, but, you know.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the other issues in the game, because, you know, admittedly, you know, I love this game. I'm really into it, but there have been a lot of issues since it's come out, you know, not the least of which is, you know, how many 4v4 games you actually get a finish before you get an error.
For something like that, I've noticed that whenever I alt-tab, I get a lot more errors, and it affects the other players as well. So maybe they should do something about alt-tabbing, because, you know, when you're waiting for a match to start, well, heck, I'm not going to sit around and watch that same screen. I'm going to alt-tab, look at some stuff, post a Reddit post, talk about how the servers are crap, you know, do something else. And if you're on full screen and you alt-tab, sometimes you will mess up the current round. And apparently it's been taxing the Ubisoft servers as well. Maybe some of this is caused by the players, but Ubisoft could do something to alleviate that.
Yeah. Well, I know Ubisoft said they just had a dev stream, I think, yesterday. And one of the things they said was one of the things that's taxing the servers and kicking people off is they have a lot of people, I think rage quitting was actually the term they used. Yeah, and there is the other kind of issue right now, and this isn't a bug in any way. It's just there's no current way in the game to punish you for leaving a game. If you're just bored with a game, you can go to the menu and say, you know, like, go to main menu, and you're not, like, that's, you're fine. You can, you know, there's no, like I said, no punishment. You know, whereas most games would say, okay, if you do that, you know, if you do that too many times, then you have to wait now, like, an hour or however long to queue into your next game.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely Ubisoft's fault. I'm not even gonna, because rage quitting has been a term since the 90s, since online play first existed. It's not new. It's old. So for them to not even have or even think that, like, oh, our players are not gonna rage quit. Yeah, they are. it happens all the time. It's happened in every fighting game. It's happened in many MOBA games. It happens all the time. People rage quit, and they should definitely get penalized for it. Blizzard has mechanics for it. Capcom has mechanics for it. Ubisoft, it should have been the first thing that you should have thought of. I mean, I'm pretty sure even during the beta and the alpha and the open beta, people were rage quitting. Like, it's just going to happen. For them not to have a mechanic to penalize those people is totally on their fault.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I play chess online sometimes. You get rage quitters in that. I think you're absolutely right that it just happens in everything.
Yeah, it's kind of a delicate issue, because if you're having a lot of technical problems and then you get lever and it's not your fault, you're going to be like, F this game. So it's just always hard to tell what to do. Levers has its own disadvantage, you know, penalizing people that have actual problems with staying in the game. I mean, obviously, overall increasing the stability of the game so that people don't have those problems in the first place helps, but I don't know if lever penalty is going to be the right solution.
Well, the way they do it, the way the other games do it with rage quitters, it's not that you get penalized. Well, although there are some games that penalize you immediately, even if your game crashes, which obviously it shouldn't be done that way. But there are a lot of games where they won't penalize you the first time you do it. If you do it like 3 or 4 times after that, or sometimes even 2 times, then they penalize you. And of course, obviously it kind of sucks for people that definitely are gonna, you know, they lose connections and stuff. They don't, you know, maybe in the area they don't have a strong connection and stuff. But that's a few compared to the majority of people that are going to be rage quitting.
I mean, what I believe they should do is introduce a rejoin feature and use that so that people that genuinely disconnect can reconnect to their fights and not get penalized.
That's true, but the thing is that it puts the person who didn't get disconnected at an advantage, because now there's going to be a character in the game that's going to be sitting there. Like, it's not like Hearthstone. You know, Hearthstone, it reconnects you and stuff, but the game still keeps going. You still lose your timer. You can still lose your round. So while I do agree that they should have that, there's nothing to stop the other player from ganking you, so you're still going to get a loss, more than likely. Not 100%, but more than likely.
Right, and we see that in, like, MOBAs a lot, but, you know, especially when they introduce a ranked mode, I'd much rather get back into a game where I'm disadvantaged than get an automatic loss because of a server error.
That's true.
All right, so what about this isn't actually a bug, but gear stats and kind of revenge in general. I know a lot of people are unhappy about those.
Yeah, I can see why.
Yeah, where should I start? Well, I think the easiest fix is to, which is something I actually posted this during the closed beta. As a solution, I posted that I believe that the stats should be rearranged because they're a lot of them are not supposed to be where they are. For example, the rage stats. The rage stats should all be together. At least the three main ones, which are attack increase on revenge. I'm sorry, I said rage. I meant revenge. The revenge stats should be in one place. So different revenge with defense, revenge with injury, and revenge with attack should be on one place. Or they should just remove the revenge attack and revenge defense and just keep the other two, but still put them on one equipment. So at that point, you have the choice of either having, you know, high revenge injury or high revenge on defense, but then you don't have attack, you know, and then you can have defense because obviously it will be on another gear stat. Or you can do revenge injury and attack or revenge injury and defense, you know, so now it's either you take a lot of hits and then you have, you know, when you revenge, you have a higher attack, or you have to defend a lot, which will make it a little bit harder for the assassin classes because while they can, you know, it always falls down to the player and the player skills, but it's, you know, it doesn't make it easy for these people to do that.
And then another thing on one versus ones, I don't think any revenge should be generated at all because this game is already too defensive as it is with all those advantages you get for being defensive, and revenge is just, you know, an extra strawberry on the giant cake.
Totally agree. 100% with that.
Yeah, I'm also in agreement there. You know, I've been doing some Conqueror in duels, and if I get revenge in 1v1, it's absolutely ridiculous.
But yeah, I mean, that's my opinion in terms of what they should do with the gear stats. Some people are like, oh, they should just remove it from the gears, but I don't think there's no need for that.
No, one of the things I like about this game, you know, is that I'm playing an archetype, not a character, you know, so that I can make my Nibushi look different than the other Nibushis. I can build more offensively or defensively. You know, I like that those options exist, but I do agree with you, Fatal, that like the revenge stats need to be together, maybe even toned down a bit as well.
And they need to fix debug as well. Or, I'm sorry, debuff, because it lets you get out of parry grabs, and it's really annoying.
Yeah, I heard about that yesterday. I didn't know that if you have a high debuff, that your parry, your stagger is actually shorter when you get parried.
I mean, I'm a sinner. I just wanted some bleed resistance. And then when I noticed myself, like, guard break countering out of parries, I'm like, oh, what? When did this happen? How am I doing this?
Yeah, I saw that too. I actually saw someone made a really nice video that was just showing, like, you have a huge window to guard break counter if your debuff is high enough.
Yeah, I don't even have mine maxed out and I can do it.
Yeah, I actually had mine maxed out before on the Conqueror, but I didn't even know about that. And then I just got rid of it. I was like, nah, I'll go the other way. And well, that should definitely be changed.
Forgetting which one of you brought this up earlier when we were talking off air, but there's the incomplete and sometimes even inaccurate move lists.
Oh yeah, that was me. Oh my god, where do I even start? Yeah, there's certain characters, the ones I've done research on thus far, which are the Valkyrie, the Conqueror, and the Warlord, that have their, I mean, for the experienced cat player, it doesn't really have an effect, but this is something for like newer players and stuff, where you'll have, for example, like the Conqueror. The Conqueror has the superior block attack, heavy attack, that it doesn't work. I've spent hours during the beta and even after the open beta and even now testing this out, with where it specifically says that when you do a heavy attack on startup, you get the superior block. It doesn't work. And I think that, and people are like, oh yes, it does work. I'm like, no, it doesn't, because every time I've done a heavy attack, the only thing when a person's going to attack me, the only thing I get is a parry. But when I do it with the Warlord, or when I do it with the Valkyrie, or any other character that has a superior block light attack, it works perfectly fine. Now with the Conqueror, what does work is when you charge. If you hold the button down, the heavy button down, and then you at startup, he gets the superior block ability. But there's nowhere in there's not even a description for that, for the charge attack. So one of the things that I actually posted was, hey, you know, this is not working, and you're getting, and either they didn't realize that they got it confused with the heavy attack. So that's like one thing. The other thing too, like you have with the Valkyrie, her light attack combo, which I think is called the bull rush or the boar's rush, which is the three light attacks. For some reason whatsoever, on the description, the first attack has a star, which indicates that when you get the first hit, the second hit is guaranteed. So, like, characters like the Warden have it, the Orochi have it, and it works. But for the Valkyrie, which I don't know, maybe if in the Alpha that's how it worked, it doesn't work. But for some reason, the star for the light attack is still there. And then you have characters that don't have anything, like the Warlord, where the Warlord, his grab moves. You can move with the grab. Now everybody knows that now because you have YouTube videos or because you have people that discovered it before. But in the under the movelet description, it's not even there.
Yeah, so that's definitely something, you know, kind of all of that I would hope just gets fixed. It shouldn't be too hard to, it's pretty simple stuff for the most part.
It is, and like I said, while it doesn't apply really to the veteran players already or to the mid-tier players, for beginning players, it's beneficial for them to know these things, you know, and not get it from because they saw somebody else doing it or because they saw it on YouTube or on Twitch.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a quality of life thing. But it should still be fixed nonetheless.
Yeah, I agree. Farcon, do you have anything else to...
Just for the alt-tabbing, really. I have a really solid connection, so I can't really say about connection issues as much as other people can.
So what about the... this is a big change of topic. What about the story mode? You guys, how did you feel about that overall? Because I like the story. Obviously, it's very short. But yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, you said story mode. I think what you meant to say was the longer than normal tutorial mode. Because that's exactly what it is. I mean, the story is great. I like the story and everything. All it is a glorified tutorial mode for not all the characters, just a certain amount of characters, which is one thing I didn't like. I thought that when I first did it that I was going to actually get to use all four characters for every faction. And... we didn't even get. There's certain factions that don't. You don't even get to use three of the characters, which were even are released before they introduced the last four. I mean, I'm sorry, the last three, the newer three, which were the Nabushi, the Warlord, and the Valkyrie. Oh no, I'm sorry, the Shigoki, the Nabushi, and the Valkyrie, which were the last three. The last three that they were introduced towards the end after the first closed beta. So I'm pretty sure that they already had the storyline done. But like, you know, you can't like. For the knights, you don't get to use the Conqueror, so you don't even know what that character is like if you first got the game. For the Vikings, you don't use.
You use the Raider way too much.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah.
You feel Raider legendary after playing for so long.
The Raider is legendary. I think you only get to use two classes in that one. You use the Valkyrie. And the Raider,
the Warlord, though.
Yeah, I think for.
Oh yeah, you do use
the
Warlord.
It's the like Samurai. You only do two. It's for the Samurai. You only do the Orochi and the Kensei.
Yeah. So yeah, and then the Samurai, you only do the Orochi and the Kensei, and the Orochi, you just the entire time. So I mean, like that part, they you know they should have at least let everybody use the original three characters for every faction, but they didn't do that.
I think it would have been a little bit better where when you have friends join in, they can't choose other characters. They have to choose the same one as you. And it's like,
yeah.
Really?
Oh, really? See, I haven't done the you know story mode with a friend, but I thought the way it worked is like in the Orochi mission where you have the Nabushi next to you, I thought your friend was the Nabushi. Or like when you're the Warden and there's the Conqueror, your friend was the Conqueror.
No, you're just some nameless scrub that's there, and it's like, hey, how's it going?
That seems like a huge missed opportunity.
Yeah, it really is. I would have enjoyed not even just being the Warden, but like playing as the Conqueror and like that certain mission where he's with you.
Yeah, that would have been great, but...
Yeah.
I mean, because it would also open up like a more interesting alternative on perspective, because you could see it from the Conqueror's point of view. Because with the Warden in a certain story, you go one path, but you... During that path, you see the Conqueror dueling on this like this really short bridge, and you're like, "Man, why isn't that me?"
Yeah. And then I don't want to mention the ending yet. I was thinking we could talk about that in the next episode, just in case you know someone listens to this and you know hasn't played that yet, or you know maybe even hasn't picked up the game yet.
Well, I'm gonna say this. I'm not gonna spoil it because you know there are people that definitely want to know, still want to know if the game is good. But I mean, honestly, dude, they have the ending. All over YouTube.
right. But see, I actually didn't realize that was the ending. I was getting there, but when I was watching the you know during the beta when the story wasn't out, you know it doesn't seem like the ending.
They really could have used an additional chapter which brought all three factions together against the main antagonist instead of just what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the funny thing is that that's what I thought the ending was going to be.
Right. Maybe For Honor 2, they'll have something like that. Oh, the main antagonist survives. Let's do it all over again.
You know what I really didn't like? I didn't like that there's certain characters. Well, I don't know if she, I think she might have been maybe the only character, but she had moves that the Warden doesn't have. And they were really good looking moves.
Yeah.
I parried all those though, so.
I know, I did too, but they were really good looking moves. I'm like, I want the Warden to have those moves. Shit, if he had them, then I would have definitely been playing Warden right now.
I will say, I think I died more in the final battle than I did the rest of the campaign put together.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I died from like a couple ledge falls because I didn't have the counter timing, but other than that, the final fight was just monotonous. Like, okay, parry, okay, parry, okay, parry, okay, parry. Oh, you're going to do that move, huh? I'm not going to parry that. I'm just going to dodge that one.
Yeah. Actually, that's what my entire strategy for the final match. Here's a tip for you. Grab all the arrows that you can and just pelter to death. You don't have to parry. You have none. Just pelter to death.
Yeah, there were a lot of the arrows laying around.
At the final match, all I did was pelter. I was like, pelt, 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 pelt. All right, she's dead. Game over.
There are a couple things. I do want to talk about some of the stuff, kind of mechanics in the story I liked. Anytime there was a like crossbow turret, I loved that. And I kind of wish there was something like that in Dominion. I mean, it might have to be a little bit balance better, but
I would hope so. That thing rapid fire like a pistol. I'm like, what? Wait, it was how fast it should load.
And it was killing heroes one shot.
Yeah. So definitely not that strong, but just kind of the idea of, you know, the only like interactable I think we have right now in PvP are the gates on Sanctuary Bridge you can drop on people.
Yeah.
So just other stuff like that. You know, as long as it's, you know, like I said, like so the gates are fair because, you know, people aren't going to just stand there. I mean, they're, you know, once you understand the layout of the map and you realize that you can see someone before walking through there, like you're fine. But just that kind of thing, I do enjoy that.
Yeah, like I think I definitely agree with that. I definitely think that if they do have it though, it should only be like it should have something like in where it only affects the environment. So, like for example, they could have the crossbows, which would be great, but you can only hit the minions. So you're like, you know, you're trying to take over B, but you're doing it from a distance.
I mean, that's fine and all, but it's going to matter where the placement of that is, because if it's at like a point, then you know it's not going to be great. But if it's in a place that's really exposed and you could get like seriously destroyed if you use it for too long, then that would be a lot better.
Yeah, that's. I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. Like it should be like
if,
that.
If it's on a ledge, you know, then and you're not paying attention, someone could come knock you off. I think that would be fair.
Yeah.
Something like that. Maybe not a ledge, or maybe a ledge, but it won't kill you. It'll just like really hurt you. But yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, like it could be on top of a platform, and if you're like there and not paying attention, stuff somebody just come from the back and just whack the hell out of you.
Yeah, and then I don't know how many of the observables you guys saw in the story mode, but those I did enjoy as well, just because it was a lot of like Apollyon talking about the history of stuff, and I think that's sort of hints for future content, like the knights, all their siege weapons are from legionnaires, and then as we've seen kind of the silhouette of one of the new characters they're gonna, and he's like a legionnaire.
I mean, I kind of tried to do that, but then like I'd progress with the story and then it would be interrupted. So they'd be like, this waterfall was, break down that gate! And it's like, what is that?
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was the same thing. I was kind of discouraged because I used to find them and I was like, all right, let me listen to them and stuff, and then interrupt it. And I'm like, all right, you know what? I'll just find them as I go.
Yeah, and some of them, I mean, I haven't gone through all of them yet. I'd have to like play again on you know, sort of easy and just run through, but there was some where I felt like I looked all over and then only had like 5 out of 10.
Yeah, that's something I didn't like. And what makes it even harder is the fact that the story mode, you don't want to redo it over again.
No, yeah, I know what you mean. It is a kind of once and done thing.
Maybe for realistic with friends, but nah.
Yeah, that's one thing though. I would definitely suggest anybody who's new to the game, to definitely do their hardest to play the game, the story mode, unrealistic. Because I personally, in my opinion, I believe that it makes you a lot better at parrying and predicting moves, because you'll get used to seeing attacks on the motion of the character as opposed to looking at the UI.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, also because, you know, we're saying you don't really want to do the story mode multiple times, and if you do it on, you know, like, God forbid, easy, I think you're just going to regret it.
Well, yeah, of course, you miss out on so much stuff. You miss out on all the customizations and stuff, so you definitely recommend to do it on realistic.
All right. You know, any last thoughts, anything at all?
Everyone, get good.
I think that this game should be, like, really pushed forward, but it needs to be fixed on a high level, but still be fun for everyone on the low level skill based. And domination and elimination kind of cover that, but the problem with that is that the gear score kind of conflicts with people who want to diversitize. Like, yeah, I got this hero to rep 4, let me try out this new character, maybe have fun with my friends in Dominion. We're getting trounced because I don't know how to play this character, and everyone else is a 108 gear score. And I think that's another thing that they should address, because that gets real annoying real fast.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about their matchmaking system. I don't even think they have one, honestly, to say the truth.
I mean, it's a weird matchmaking system that takes into account both your rep and your win rate. The problem is when you choose a different hero, it doesn't reflect that. It reflects as though you are still using the same rep 4 character. Say, for example, I bring some of my Heroes of the Storm friends in. They don't know how to play. I play a low-class hero. It's not going to be fun when you're fighting, like, rep 6, 108, Lawbringers, Wardens, and Warlords.
Yeah.
And the problem also is because of how it's made, because you match make, and then you choose your hero, and it's not the other way around.
Oh, you think they should do the match make first and then choose a hero?
No, they should choose the hero and then match make. Yeah. That way, if you're like the Shigoki level 5, then, you know, hey, you're going to be paired up with other non-rep heroes, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I hear what you're saying. I think I'd rather see some sort of like a variable gear score, kind of like where you say, like, I want to play a new character, so you can queue into a, like, must have less than 40 gear score game. Because, you know, the issue with, like, let's say you do have someone who's, like, a very, very high-tier warlord and then decides to play Conqueror. Like, they're not, I mean, they're similar enough. That person's still going to be really good. You know, should they really be matched up so they can just stomp noobs all day?
I mean, sure, they'll be matched up against higher, like, skill-based characters, because that's where the win rate comes in. You have, like, high win rate characters with low rep scores. That's how the matchmaking.
Oh, okay, yeah. Sorry, I misunderstood. No, that does make sense.
That's apparently how their system works, but I'm not fully sure. And then of course, well, the rep kind of determines the max. But matchmaking, yeah,
and as you pointed out, you know, you get matched up before you choose character, so that's all nullified.
Yes. So, like, you could have Smurfs, as they call it in the community. You could have Smurfs, but it would be, like, Smurfs with their friends against other Smurfs with their friends or something like that, instead of just Smurfs with their friends against super ultra-high gear score. A Lawbringer looks like he's got fire wings. The other guy's electrical. The other guy's got darkness. And it's like, what the hell are we fighting, man?
Pokemon?
Yeah. Anything you guys want to plug? You know, Twitter, streaming, anything?
I mean, I have a channel, but I've been relatively inactive. I'm working on a video. It's going to be how a peacekeeper tries to find true honor and fails. And it'll be like kind of like a weird music video. I'm still kind of working at it, but, you know, work, personal life, the storm just hit. So a lot of things to fix again.
Yeah, I'm trying to build something up right now. I just started the channel, YouTube channel, actually. It's the Fatal Fury 84, although it has my name because I don't have any subscribers, which is Wilson, my real name, last name Aguiar. But yeah, I'm gonna start streaming there as time goes, little by little, until I get a real knack for it. You know, hopefully work and stuff doesn't get in the way, so I can really, you know, start pumping in videos and stuff for people to see, especially Valkyrie gameplay, because I know a lot of people want to really get into the Valkyrie, especially now.
Well, if anyone wants to, you can follow me at Twitter. I'm at indigo_ex, and that will also be in the episode description. Again, with all the Coldfire stuff, a lot of the links we talked about, I'll put in there. So thanks for listening, and look for our episode 2.
Later.
Yep, see you then.